Shop Germain Ford of Beaver Creek, minutes away with an experience miles above. Delivering the right car, the right price, the right way. Come see why more are choosing Germain Ford. Just off of 35 east of 675, Germain Ford of Beaver Creek.
Welcome to Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast with WHIO meteorologist McCall Rydags and Kirsty Zontini, brought to you by Germain Ford and Beaver Creek. Remember, you can listen to Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast anytime you want on Apple iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and WHIO.com.
Hey, McCall.
Hey, Kirsty.
How are you?
I'm good. We're in the summertime, or it feels like it.
I know. We've been treated to 70s a couple days in a row, which I think everyone was ready for.
I know.
Maybe not ready for the rainfall, though.
Yeah, the rain's not so great, nor is the tree pollen, because I have been popping like Claritin or the generic brand of that every day.
Yeah, I believe it. We've really started to see our tree pollen spike. Some of the highest counts, actually, yesterday's was one of the highest counts we've seen so far in the Dayton area, at least. And we know south of us, they're really struggling. The Carolinas, Tennessee. They're kind of getting an overlap of their pollen seasons between tree and grass pollen. Oh. So not great if you're traveling south anytime soon.
No. And there, I wrote a Dayton Daily News article about pollen. Yeah. And there is a time frame when we get into May, around May typically is when we see that crossover.
Right.
We're at the tail end of tree pollen season and then grass pollen really spikes at that point. And for me, both of those pollens, especially grass pollen, I'm done.
For you.
I love the smell of freshly cut grass, but within 5 minutes, I'm done. I'm done.
Understandably so. Yeah. Well, we actually had our Dayton Daily News partners kind of brought up this idea for us for a podcast episode because they had done an article about now that we're in spring, how are farmers being impacted? And we know this winter we ended up having the third wettest February on record for us.
Right.
We just didn't really get a whole lot of time to dry out. And now we're heading into spring. And spring is a wet time for us here in Ohio. We've already dealt with several rounds of severe weather. And now we're in a pattern where we're going to have a couple days of, you know, prolonged rounds of rain.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and one of the authors of that article that you're speaking of came back to ask me some questions about how much rain we've had so far this year. I mean, February, as you mentioned, was the wettest, or third wettest, something like that, for February. And I was online and looking at soil moisture content and saw that the Miami Valley was in the 95th percentile. And for me, that just means above average, but I don't know that much about it. And that's kind of why we have our experts in today.
We do. And we've got a great expert where we're going to be very excited to talk about. So one will focus a little more with the farming side of things, but of course the other will focus more as also an atmospheric scientist. He'll talk a little bit more about, I think, soil, all those questions we're going to have for him.
Excellent.
So, I want to start off, though, with a little introduction to you so you know who we are speaking with. We're going to start with Sam Custard. He is an extension educator for agriculture and natural resources in Dart County, and that's for the Ohio State Extension Office. He focuses on farm management. He educates about the Farm Bill, financial aspects of farm planning, pesticide recertification, crop and nutrient management. And not only was he a high school agricultural educator, he also was a school administrator for more than 30 years. Sam, I didn't know that you had that background as well.
Yes, a great opportunity to both teach and then serve as an administrator down at Miami Valley Career Technology Center. So, gives me a broad background.
Yes. Well, I mean, we know being able to educate is, I mean, it's a great skill set, being able to explain something that you know a lot about to others that have questions. So we're going to talk more with you, Sam, in just a minute, but I also want to introduce Aaron Wilson. He is an atmospheric scientist. Welcome. Of course, we've got another weather nerd on the podcast. And Sam, I'm assuming you are as well, especially being in agriculture. But so Aaron is part of the Ohio State University. He owns a joint I can't speak today, McCall.
I'm sorry. It's all right.
We're in my final month of pregnancy,
I know,
by the way, so
forgiveness.
I'm losing it. Anyways, he is a research associate, and he also is an extension outreach arm of the College of Food, Agriculture, and Environmental Sciences as well with Ohio State. So he's lived in Ohio in his whole life, which we know as meteorologists, the longer you could be in an area, the more familiar you become with weather patterns. And especially since he focuses in on not only Ohio weather, but also climate. That's a big deal for him. Aaron works to contribute to the weekly U.S. Drought Monitor, which McCall and I look at a lot. And he also works closely with area farmers to discuss changing weather extremes and impacts on climate. So Aaron is going to be a great resource. As we mentioned, we're going to have a lot of soil questions for you, sir.
Okay, great.
Yes.
All right, so Sam, let's talk a little bit more with you about the agriculture side of things. Heading into spring in Ohio, you know, I guess being a farming community, especially the Miami Valley, we have a lot of rural counties, a lot of smaller farms, family farms. How tough of skin do you have as a farmer in Ohio?
Well, it is become a challenge with our weather extremes. We're sitting out here in a time period when we would have liked to have had a lot of our spring work done prior to planting, and coming off a very, very wet fall when none of the fall work was accomplished. We still haven't had time to accomplish our fall work, and we're moving into spring work. So I know there's a lot of anxiousness at the breakfast table in our farm families as they think about what needs to be accomplished. And then they watch the evening news or morning news and see that you all are going to share with us another couple days of rain here. So it is, it is a stressful time period. And we think about everything that these farmers are going to try to do, they're going to need to do here in the next 3 weeks to be able to raise a corn and soybean crop. And they're very dependent upon that weather to pull that off. So there is a lot of anxiousness or stress in families right now.
So Sam, I don't think that I realized that it went all the way back to the fall as to what's causing the delay now. I guess I was just thinking that it was February's, you know, soggy month that was slowing things down.
Yes, we were here in Dart County, or especially the southern part of the county, we had up to 58 inches of rain for calendar year 18, which is one of the wettest, I would think, in history. And it was very hard for guys to get even their corn and soybeans harvested. Actually, we had some soybeans harvested last week, and there's still some here in the county to be harvested, though. We haven't been able to get it accomplished. And usually there's a lot of nutrients and fall tillage that's done, and none of that was done much in the county. So that's yet to be done.
Wow. Like McCall had said, that's quite a delay.
Yeah.
Aaron, if you want to chime in a little bit on the extremes that Sam is talking about, you know, as someone who is honed in on Ohio climate and some of the weather extremes, what have you noticed? I mean, maybe just in the past couple of years in terms of more wet weather, higher, you know, storm totals, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different facets to this. And absolutely, this is, you know, in terms of the amount of precipitation we've seen and the soil moisture conditions, really does go back quite a ways. As Sam mentioned, you know, this past autumn was the third wettest. We had the second wettest September. And really, we've had the wettest decade since 1895 here in Ohio. If you look at just the last 12 months from April of 18 through March of 2019, it's the second wettest April to March period since 1895 for Ohio. So that's certainly just in the short term and a little bit of the long term as well, just being this wet decade, even two decades that we've seen. Another thing, when we talk about just not just the overall precipitation, but the seasonality of the precipitation changes. So one of the things that we know for sure is we've observed very strong trends in our fall precip, as well as our spring precip in some regions across Ohio. And again, that really impacts, has a direct impact on the spring and fall field work. So we're able to see that, for instance, that you know, in terms of suitable days for field work in Ohio, we've essentially lost 5 days in April and 5 days in October since 1995 as a result of the increased overall wetness and inability to get out into the fields. And so that has really practical impacts, hardship on farmers when they're trying to get things established, as Sam mentioned.
And Sam, a little bit for you, I guess if someone's listening and they're like, well, I'm not a farmer, so why should I care? But why should people care? Because this is a huge chunk of our community, not only in the Miami Valley, but I mean, in the state of Ohio as well. And everything is kind of connected. These are families. This is economy for them. So how is it connected if maybe you're not a farmer and you're just kind of like, well, that stinks?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, agriculture is Ohio's number one industry, is shared through our past governors. Mm-hmm. Typically mention that frequently in their presentations. So most farmers, the income that they earn, the profits that they earn, they reinvest that money. Mm-hmm. And almost all of them reinvest that, but right back in their communities that they live and work in. So I think that's I would say that's why it matters to all of us. Mm-hmm. Because of that reinvestment into the community. And then secondly, there's a direct correlation between our consumer prices in the grocery store and the impacts we have and the ability to produce that food on our local farms. And as we move into the local food movement, and mm-hmm. many of our restaurants and mm-hmm. and grocery stores have moved to local foods. And if we can't raise that locally, that puts a whole new perspective and challenge for those operations too.
And I have to say that's true, especially I've noticed moving out here 6.5 years ago, we're really local.
Yes.
And I'm very proud of the fact that mm-hmm. the Miami Valley is very big on local economy and produce and things like that. Question for you, Sam, how late can we really wait before we get in the fields and plant that next season crop?
Well, we're probably already at the point on our soybeans that and corn that we could possibly see a yield reduction for every day that we're out of the fields. May 10th is kind of that magical date when we would mm-hmm. like to have everything planted.
Okay.
And I looked at some current research, and Indiana is the closest research would say to plant our corn crop, we need a minimum of 14 days to get that done for the state of Ohio and Indiana. And we look at the past maybe 20 years, it looks like 44% of the time we get those 14 days to be able to plant that corn crop. So as we go into that May 20th period, we've lost a couple bushels per acre, and that all factors into that bottom line in an already depressed farm economy with very low commodity prices.
Man, that is crazy how everything is all connected. A little bit about that connection, I guess maybe more from you, Aaron. What other factors, besides precipitation, everyone thinks of rain, mm-hmm. but what other factors play into soil moisture? Because it's not just rain.
Yeah, certainly, basic soil type has a lot to do with whether, kind of the speed at which things drain and run off, and whether or not you're able to work those soils with, sandy soils, perhaps, drying off a little bit faster. But in our region, we don't have a lot of that, obviously. So that's one factor. I think, the early in the season, for instance, if you've got a lot of soil moisture, and I think this is what we saw in March, even though the sun angle is getting stronger, we've got more energy hitting and reaching the surface. It takes a while for these wet soils to warm up versus mm-hmm. the dry mm-hmm. soils. And so that's another thing that starts to compact the issues that we're seeing out there. And, we've had some, I would say, obviously beautiful weather over the last week or two, and some dry days and windy days. And overall, the last 30 days have been a little bit drier than we saw for much of the winter and early spring. So a lot of people are seeing some dryness take place on the surface, but you don't have to go but an inch or two below the surface and yeah. it's still very, very wet. And so it's almost deceiving. Like, we've got some of our typical things. We look at drought, for instance, and some of the indicators would say, yeah, we've, based on the precipitation, there could be drought when we know
right.
just below mm-hmm. the surface, there's a lot of water, stream flows are high. So all of these things are, it's a complex issue, but certainly those are some of the other variables when it comes to soil moisture and what we're seeing.
And I recognize that last summer because I know that there was perhaps 4 weeks of dryness mm-hmm. where we didn't have much precipitation. I can't recall what month it was or what time during the summer, and wondering if we were going to go into a drought. Right. And I think just a sliver of the Miami Valley went to abnormally dry. And that yeah. speaks to that soil moisture content. And talking about soil moisture content, can you kind of just explain what that means? I know it means, you know, it goes deeper into the soil, but when I'm looking at numbers and say the 95th percentile of soil moisture, what does that mean?
Yeah, so there's a couple of important factors here. So when you look at a 95th percentile, for instance, you're relying on long-term observations, and you're looking at the entire observation time series, or all of the data throughout many years of data, and you're looking at distributions of a, you know, certain quantity of water per volume, basically, mm-hmm. of the soil. And so when you say 95th percentile, that means out of all the observations that we've seen, right now, the amount of water, that quantity of water per volume of soil, is in that top 95th percentile, or it's the amount on the higher end of the extremes. We got some places across southern Ohio, even in the 99th percentile.
Wow.
So you're looking at that absolute top 1% of the wettest content of soil. So that's a way, I think the easiest way to think about it is, if you took a certain, you know, amount of soil, mm-hmm. how much water is contained in that unit of soil. And so that's a way to understand those soil percentiles.
And that's compared over a period of time. So if you're collecting all the data and you're comparing, you know, the observation that you just took to all the data that you had, you're talking about you're in the top 95th percentile for how much moisture is in there.
Correct. Yeah.
When it comes to factors, I guess, to give a little bit of hope, or what farmers, as Sam had mentioned, mm-hmm. are anxious. And clearly this isn't a quick 3 days of dry weather and you're fine. Mm-hmm. So what are they hoping for? What is some of the things that, as meteorologists here locally, you know, that we can highlight that is helpful? You kind of said a little bit, wind, of course, the sun angle helps a little bit. You know, I mean, how many dry days, how long of a stretch would be beneficial to us, or infrequent isolated downpours are a little easier to deal with than what we'll see Friday and Saturday?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things to unpack, and Sam can chime in, I think, here too. You know, kind of tongue in cheek, I always get from farmers is, can you give me a 10-day forecast that's just dry and no rainfall, and I can get a lot done.
Right.
You know, one of the things that farmers are thinking about is how to plant quicker, how to get some of these tasks done with less time, with this decreasing time. But mm-hmm. That's certainly, you know, one thing that I think is helpful. You know, I think it's good from a farmer perspective that a little bit of that Climate Prediction Center outlook, mm-hmm. of, hey, you know, the next 6 to 10 or 8 to 14 days look like we could be edging drier. That can help, I think, and Sam can tell me if I'm right, you know, help the long-term plan. Like, when can I make up some work if I'm going to miss out, say, over the next 2 days with this rainfall that we're expecting now?
I think that is very important as we look at that. And right now, from a layman's terms, I think most farmers out here realize that we're coming into a period that we're going to need at least a week of dry weather. And when we're talking about dry weather, we want sun, wind, mm-hmm. warm temperatures to start drying things out. And we have gone with larger equipment. And as guys look at these predictions, some of the research that we've found is that we definitely want to get away from trying to beat the storm. Mm-hmm. We found through research that when we try to beat the storm and get a crop planted right before a rain, especially one of those cold rains, that we typically take a real hit in our production, because some of that first drinks of water that young seedling will get will be that very cold water, mm-hmm. that comes from those storms. So most of our farmers have moved away from that philosophy of trying to beat the rain. So if they can look long term where they're at, and it also allows guys to determine, okay, what kind of hours am I going to have to operate? Because we do have some guys that push the envelope and will plant 24 hours a day for 3 or 4 days in a row, and they can get a lot done, but that's not an ideal situation, because that's when we tend to make mistakes and safety becomes a real concern. But if you tell me that I've only got this number of days in the next 2 weeks, guys will try to get as much done as they can possibly get done in that optimal period to be out of the field maybe 24 hours, 48 hours before that next big storm event.
Yeah, that I never thought about the cold rain that's like a shock to, you know, a little seedling. That's really interesting, actually, especially when you think about, we're in the 70s, but we get some storms. Well, even though it's warm, like you said, that for those first drops that are coming out of that storm, that is some very cooled rain and cooled air as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sitting here thinking and listening about, wet ground and those large pieces of equipment. It's, you know, you have to think about the potential of your equipment getting stuck out in the fields in those type of situations. And then I'm thinking, well, if you're waiting and you're going to use the bigger equipment to do more and you're just constantly waiting, you know, the bigger the equipment, the heavier it might be. And the stress and having to calculate all that, I can't imagine what that's like.
It is that I really have a huge respect for our farmers and it's turned into a true business adventure. And if our farmers aren't treating their operation as a business, it's very difficult for them to survive in the world we're in today. So they're pulling in all this data that you can provide them and Aaron can provide them as they make these decisions. And they're trying to, we know that if we get out on wet soils, we can ruin soils for a couple years where we're going to reduce our production. So they're not wanting to get out there too early, but they want to be out there the first day they can possibly get there. When we look at a year like this, I think back to my first year when I transitioned from my school administration job to this extension job. It was 2012.
The drought.
Yes.
Guys had pretty much everything planted by this time.
Yeah.
2012, and the ground was in excellent condition in April, better than I've ever seen it. But it didn't result in anything because we failed to get that rain for most of the summer. We're out here now, and it looks like we're going to have another one of those years, and where you're going to give to us a small window in May to get things planted.
Right. And maybe Sam or Aaron can answer this question, because I'm thinking about the amount of rain, and we talked about runoff. Are we seeing the nutrients in the soil being impacted because of how much rain? I mean, is it pulling some of the nutrients away that, you know, maybe in past years the crop would be better because it had those nutrients?
Well, what we're seeing, it's a real water quality issue. We know that when we get these large rain events, they do move nutrients. I guess for right now, we'd say there's very few additional nutrients have been applied this year yet or last fall because the conditions have not been good for that. But we do lose nutrients, and we've made a conscious effort through some science-based research to determine the best time to do those applications. So I think in the next decade, we'll see many more of our nutrients be applied in that growing crop during that season, maybe June, July, when we don't have as many of the large rain events, and the plants can go ahead and grab onto those nutrients they need right away, and we'll lose less nutrients.
Okay. Yeah, and if I can add, I mean, that's another part of the precip story is the changing character of the precipitation, the fact that statistically we've seen an increase in those heavier downpours, an inch and a half, 2 inches over a short period of time. And I think, you know, adding to what Sam said in terms of running the farm like a business, working with farmers, this is a resilient community, right? Yeah. Farmers tend to overcome the challenges that are often presented by weather. So with the wet conditions, obviously there's the potential for very high yields, for instance, in corn and things like that. I think that speaks to the work, the hard work that farmers are putting in to overcome some of these challenges that are presented from a weather perspective. And I just think that's, you know, it's something important to share with others.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, climatologically, I like to explain this to people, that your daily forecast is like your how you're feeling on any particular day. Sometimes you wake up, you're happy, and some days you wake up and you're cranky, but climate is more your personality. It's constantly evolving, and it doesn't change day to day. Because we are in this wet pattern, and you're talking about it being the wettest decade for Ohio, is this looking to be climatologically the way that we're going, or is there potentially some relief or signals of relief in the future that you've seen?
Yeah, so I think that's very important to distinguish the difference of our day-to-day weather to climate, those long-term changes. The move toward wetter conditions and more extreme events is really not new. This is something that we've seen, for instance, with the extreme precipitation change right around the about the mid 90s, where we've started this big increase in the heavy downfall. What we do to kind of look at, we take both into consideration the observations that we've seen, the changes that we've seen throughout the 20th and early 21st century, but then we also model into the future, right? And based on our best evidence, our best science models, they project increases, continued increases on the order of about 10% by mid 21st century in terms of annual total precipitation. And these are likely to be due more toward extreme precipitation events, not necessarily wetter summers. There's some indications that summers could actually become drier, even though we get more rainfall over the year. So short-term water shortages versus extreme precipitation events. And that's a whole nother management structure, management challenge. So our models are suggesting that we're going to become even wetter than we are and likely have heavier downpours, but also some intense drought in there as well as a possibility. We know we have these drought events, and so it's always important to remember both sides of the hydroclimatic extremes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to touch upon what Aaron is saying, I was actually having this conversation with meteorologist Dante Jones yesterday, and he had some research that he showed me as far as, are we seeing more tornadoes? And what is actually happening is we have less days with tornadoes, but more tornadoes on one particular day. And that kind of speaks to what you're saying. You know, you can go perhaps a few weeks without any rain, and then you just get this one event that's just going to bring a deluge of precipitation.
Yeah. And I feel like too, we have seen those events of even our flash flooding event on the highway.
Yeah.
Like that's not something we typically see.
Yeah, thousand-year flood.
Thousand-year flood occurred just a few years ago. Down in Cincinnati, they had a couple isolated cities of just very urban deluge rain, and it just flooded out a community. Homes that would never really think to buy flood insurance were impacted by that. So, yes, definitely honing in on the fact that when we're talking about extremes becoming more of a commonality almost, that does not also just impact farmers. I mean, that's homeowners, that's, you know, dealing with flood events in your house.
Correct.
And drought as well, which actually, Aaron, let's talk a little bit about drought. Let's transition over to that opposite side. Sam had mentioned 2012. I think that probably sticks out to most people just recently of drought years. But also drought, how does that, and Sam, this might be a question for you first, and then Aaron will talk to you about it a little more. On the opposite side of it, for farmers dealing with drought, how does that impact what they already have in the ground then? It's a lot more resources, I'm assuming, that they'd have to keep that growth cycle going.
Right. So if we look back to 2012, like I said, the planting season went very, very well. And then we did turn dry. And at harvest, what they were left with, because all the inputs are in the field, so the farmers have invested for this crop, and some of the local farmers here in Dark County got absolutely zero yield on corn.
Oh my gosh.
So nothing from that crop. Soybeans did a little bit better because as in Dark County, we always get a nice rainfall, a rain event during the Dark County Fair.
There you go.
We had a nice rain in August, and it saved the soybeans. They were a decent yield, but corn was really impacted. So, Ohio or Dark County produces more corn and soybeans than any other county in the state of Ohio. So we rely on that. Wow. The farmers rely on that. The community relies on that. And when you go to, I think that year we were probably, I think we averaged close to 100 bushel the acre versus 2018. Our county average was 205 bushel per acre.
Wow.
So we cut our yield in half and half our production. So a huge impact there. You know, if you were in a system with irrigation, you can irrigate through those drought times, but we have very few of our farms here that are in Dark County or the Miami Valley that are irrigated. So very difficult for us.
Yeah, that's important to know, even having that ability to do the irrigation.
Right, exactly.
Aaron, how quickly, I guess, can drought conditions take over in a region?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, a flashy term, I kind of gave it away there, but a flashy term of late, probably over the last 10 years, is this idea of a flash drought. For instance, 2012, you know, like Sam said, perfect spring conditions, rapidly developing drought, 4 months of intense drought, and then we ended it with some heavy rainfall. That tends to be what drought is like in Ohio of late, where we have these short dry periods embedded within this overall wetter period. Mm-hmm. If you think back, for instance, throughout the history of drought, 1930s or even in the 50s, when we had some of these multi-year droughts, even in Ohio, we don't often see that anymore. Mm-hmm. Because we've had some larger droughts, 07 and 08, 2012, for instance, but nothing really intense since then, just a few areas across the region. And as a matter of fact, we're sitting at less than 4% in drought as of this morning across the country.
Wow.
According to the U.S. Drought Monitor, this will be the eighth week that the Midwest has had no drought since 2000.
Wow.
The longest streak before was 1 week for the Midwest.
Wow.
And we're at 8 weeks this week. So it's quite astounding the lack of drought that we have. But we know that drought can move very rapidly. One of the things is we get warmer. Overall, we have a warmer atmosphere. You start changing that hydrologic cycle. You start intensifying the evaporation a little bit, right? You get more evaporation and mm-hmm. more water vapor in the atmosphere. And oh, by the way, that keeps our summer nighttime temperatures higher as well.
Yes.
That has impacts on crop production and even, you know, cooling of livestock and things like that. So there's a lot of multifacets here that play in between temperature and drought and temperatures and drought and precipitation, all these additional, you know, struggles or obstacles that we have to overcome.
That's crazy.
That is.
It's just all so connected.
Mm-hmm.
One more question for you, Sam, and Aaron, of course, chime in. Of course, Ohio farmers, resilient, they are hard workers. Mm-hmm. What resources, because you guys both are out of Ohio State for the extension, what resources, if there is a farmer listening to this, do you to provide to maybe help guide them over the next couple of weeks
right.
into the rest of our spring?
Ohio State University, our ag crops team, we put out a weekly newsletter. It's called The Corn. It's a crop observation newsletter. And we meet by conference call every Monday morning, and we review with our state specialists and people like Aaron where we are on a statewide basis. Mm-hmm. And out of that, we start talking about as we move through the planting season, we'll have a conversation. Okay, are we starting to get into that time period when we're planting late? Do we need to change the varieties and the maturities of the crop we're planting? So I would suggest to our agronomic, to our farmers out here that are planting corn, soybeans, trying to figure out how to handle their forages, that the corn newsletter is probably the best tool that we have. And they can subscribe to that or contact their local extension office to get that, and we can provide that. And then each of the offices can follow up. All my colleagues out here are more than willing to help and mm-hmm. assist with the farmers on trying to come up with solutions. We may not have the expertise in our local office, but we can go to Columbus to people like Aaron mm-hmm. And our other state specialists to help us get the answers that farmers are looking for.
That's wonderful, Sam. And Aaron, for you as the expert, as Sam just mentioned, you know, what are some resources that you could provide, or even just some things that farmers or the daily weather enthusiast or the daily person that has a yard that they really care mm-hmm. about
yeah.
Can start checking when it comes to climate and a little bit more on some of the long range forecasts?
Yeah, absolutely. There's all kinds of things I think we can do. In addition to Extension, I'm also part of the State Climate Office of Ohio. Mm-hmm. So that's housed here at Ohio State. So we have a website, climate.osu.edu. Throughout the growing season, I put about a 6 to 12 minute video blog kind of outlining the current state of the hydro climate across the entire state. And then also incorporate some of those Climate Prediction Center outlooks that I mentioned earlier. as well as, you know, climate summaries over the previous 3 months or 3 month seasonal average. So farmers and others, anyone can look at that information as well. We have a very good, with the USDA, we have the Midwest Climate Hub. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of great information there for farmers in terms of building resilience to extreme precipitation events and how the weather challenges and the climate change is having an impact on farmers and what they can do. Yeah. So that's some great information. On day-to-day, I think a lot of weather enthusiasts follow you guys, follow mm-hmm. the National Weather Service, follow the U.S. Drought Monitor. I've actually only recently entered the Twitterverse, the Twitter world.
Yes, welcome, Aaron.
And I think that there's, you know, that's a great tool for getting some information out yeah. there in a very timely manner. So Dr. Wilson's Weather, you can find me on there if yes. you want some more information. Shameless plug.
No, that's wonderful.
Yeah, but certainly we have a lot of resources out there, and you can always contact us, as Sam mentioned, even at the county level or OSU Extension and the State Climate Office, and just reach out. I'm a weather geek, weather nerd, love talking about weather in all kinds of facets, so I'll entertain any questions that folks have.
Well, that's I'm going to speak for Kirsty in this because she's going to go on maternity leave. But depending on how the rest of this spring and summer goes, this was a very interesting conversation yes. with both Sam and Aaron. And mm-hmm. I would love to have you guys back on later this summer so we can kind of see how things have turned out and mm-hmm. where we are headed for the upcoming fall.
That would be great. Yay. I'd like to take you out in the field some of the day.
Yes.
We could do that right from my phone or my laptop, and we can stand in the middle of a field and maybe even involve a farmer and we can dig in the soil and or
That'd
whatever.
That'd be fantastic. So,
yes. Really cool. And I think you'll probably realize why I thought we needed to have Aaron on the
Yes.
Yes, it was great. It was great having Aaron on as well. But Sam and Aaron, you guys were just a wealth of knowledge that not only McCall and I appreciate, but anyone listening does as well. And anyone that's not a farmer, I just think this was really mm-hmm. eye-opening for people to tune into the fact that this is a huge part of Ohio's agriculture, our economy, our communities. Mm-hmm. So it is all very, very much important to know what's going on and you know, who in your community is working so hard,
yeah.
you know, to keep things going for their families. So thank you so much for joining us. Of course, McCall and I will be reaching back out to you because yeah, mm-hmm. this is going to be a repeat episode.
Oh, 100%.
For sure.
This is, yeah, we will have a follow-up on this. And I think this is one of those that we could have several interviews a year
yes.
to just follow. And it was very educational. I always know it's a good podcast when I feel like I've been educated. So yeah. thank you both, Sam and Aaron. And thank you, listeners, for listening to Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast. You can listen on Apple iPodcast, Google Play, Stitcher, and WHIO.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.